The Illuminati does exist. The secret society is so notorious that many have assumed it resides only in legend and myth. But it was in fact founded on May 1st, 1776, in the heart of Bavaria, Germany.
I'm standing here in the old city of Ingolstadt, where May 1st, 1776, Professor Adam Weishaupt founded the Illuminati, his attempt to create a new world order by deception. It wasn't through armies that Adam Weishaupt planned to take over existing governments. Instead, he wanted to use his secret societies in the Illuminati system and infiltrate the existing societal structures. That meant the secret societies as well as the governments around the Western world.
The secret sect Adam Weishaupt founded on May 1st, 1776, was originally named the Perfectibilist, and only later changed to its more notorious moniker, the Order of the Illuminati. Weishaupt was orphaned as a small child and adopted by his godfather, Baron von Eichstätt. The noble privileges of Eichstätt provided Weishaupt with access to a private library of more than 4,200 books, where he became a lover of knowledge, delved into the occult, and became intimately familiar with the liberal readings cropping up in the Age of Enlightenment, of reason, of science, and the ideas of thinking men challenging the grip of monarchs and of the Catholic Church.
So we're overlooking a model of the city of Ingolstadt, where Adam Weishaupt started the Illuminati at the University of Ingolstadt. He wanted to use his secret society system to overthrow existing governments and existing religions, especially monarchy. Instead, he wanted the learned men of universities with the ancient values and the ancient understanding passed down from societies like Egypt and Babylon to rule the world using the pagan values of the old system instead of the oppressive religious regimes and the oppressive monarchies that were in existence in Europe at the time.
As he came of age, Eichstätt provided Adam Weishaupt with a path towards becoming a professor at the University of Ingolstadt, and soon after placing him in a position to replace the withering curriculum of the Jesuits with the radical teachings of this new age within which he was to become such a significant figure.
This is the entrance to the University of Ingolstadt, the old university where Adam Weishaupt set up the Illuminati and his secret society to take over the world, overthrow existing governments and religions, and create a true new world order based on wise men, old learned practices from ancient regimes, and a pagan religion that didn't worship God, but worshiped the laws of man and of reason. All the stuff that came out of the Age of Enlightenment.
The name Perfectibilist underpinned the long-term esoteric aim of evolving and perfecting mankind, ultimately ascending to a position where man is God. Towards that aim, the Illuminati set out to upend and completely reorder society, which kept kings and princes, popes and emperors of the 18th century awake at night.
His New World Order system was not through armed forces and might, but through education and propaganda and changing things from within by deception.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. My name is Adam Weishaupt, and I founded 1776 the Illuminati here in Ingolstadt.
Versammlung ist gedeckt.
Lieber Bruder Zensor, es ist nicht genug damit, dass die Versammlung gedeckt sei. Macht den Anfang eurer Verrichtung.
You see, there are a lot of legends, a lot of stories about the Illuminati here in Ingolstadt. We'd like to show the historic background of the original Illuminati founded here in Ingolstadt. Adam Weishaupt founded the original Bavarian Illuminati, a secret order. He founded here around the University of Ingolstadt. And in the beginning, it was a pure opposition against the powerful Jesuits. They had a very strong, a very important role here at the Ingolstadt University. Of course, they were trying to keep the power for the church. They were trying to avoid the modern science. They didn't allow the modern science to be taught at the Ingolstadt University. And Adam Weishaupt, he wanted, in the Age of Enlightenment, he wanted to read everything, to teach everything. At the beginning, it was only more a club of young students. But later on, he developed other aims, other goals.
Of the zealous members of the Lodge Theodore, the most conspicuous was Dr. Adam Weishaupt, professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt. This person had been educated among the Jesuits, but the abolition of their order made him change his views, and from being their pupil, he became their most bitter enemy. He had acquired a high reputation in his profession, and was attended not only by those intended for the practice in the law courts, but also by the young gentlemen at large in their course of general education. And he brought numbers from the neighboring states to this university. He embraced with great keenness this opportunity of spreading the favorite doctrines of the Lodge.
Behind the scenes, powerful people like Mayor Amschel Rothschild were involved in founding the Bavarian Illuminati, while important, titled, and lettered men composed its membership. It claimed to work in secret, only because it couldn't work out in the open. The object of the Illuminati, while it remained elusive, was nothing short of a universal revolution set in motion by a, quote, invisible government of initiated agents of influence. As Terry Melanson explains, in 1777, Weishaupt was initiated into the strict observance lodge, Zur Behutsamkeit, wherein he was deeply influenced by the concept of, quote-unquote, unknown superiors, whom he believed were silently and omnisciently watching his all within the organization, as any member might secretly inform these unknowns at any time of any misconduct. There was a check at all times on behavior. It was this concept that Weishaupt impressed upon his Illuminati membership, even as they joined and took over this Munich-based lodge, expanding its reach. Meanwhile, other strict observance Freemasons would be drawn into this secret order as well, most notably Baron von Knigge. His elite connections within Freemasonry, and in particular the German court of Hesse Castle, connected Weishaupt's core group with prominent and influential figures throughout the upper classes. Thus, through recruitment and organizational efforts spurred by Knigge, Weishaupt's initiates grew to number several thousand, allowing he and his most trusted associates to virtually take over Freemasonry from within. The Bavarian Illuminati used Masonry and other competing secret society lodges as an engine to conceal its inner membership and project its agenda into already powerful circles. As Terry Melanson notes, it became apparent that virtually every court, council, and duchy of Europe had been infiltrated by, quote, men of all stations who were secretly sworn to the notorious order. It became increasingly apparent that their secret doctrines were met with serious intent, as well as the means to carry out their plans. According to Masonic scholar Albert Mackey, as well as Melanson, in 1782, the most important Masonic Congress of the entire 18th century was held over the course of some 2.5 months on the grounds of Wilhelmsbad, on the property of William IX of Hesse Castle, whose financial overseer was Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Here, in 1782, at the site of a spa and castle ruins, which included a large stone pyramid, was a contentious meeting of conflicting opinions, which resulted in the end of dominance for the strict observance model of Freemasonry and the beginning of dominance for a near-total takeover of Freemasonry by the Illuminati, under the skillful influence of Knigge and, by proxy, Weishaupt.
I am now arrived at what I should call the great epoch of cosmopolitanism, the scheme communicated to Baron Knigge by the Marchese di Costanza. This obliges me to mention a remarkable lodge of the eclectic masonry erected in Munich and Bavaria in 1775 under the worshipful master, Professor von Herr. It was called the Lodge Theodore of Good Counsel. It had its constitutional patent from the Royal York in Berlin, but it formed a particular system of its own by instructions from the Loge des Chevaliers Bénéficents at Lyons, with which it kept up a correspondence. This respect to the lodge at Lyons had arisen from the preponderance acquired in general by the French party in the convention at Wilhelmsbad. The deputies of the Rosaic lodges, as well as the remains of the Templars and strict observance, all looking up to this as the mother lodge of what they called the Grand Orient de la France, consisting in 1782 of 266 improved lodges.
A number of high-ranking and notable members joined the Illuminati as a result of this conference, including Johann Joachim Christoph Bode, who would later succeed Weishaupt and spread Illuminism into France in time to provoke the revolution there. A dissenting member of this Wilhelmsbad conference, nonetheless confined to secrecy, reportedly walked away warning with horror about the, quote, tragic secrets he carried. I will not confide them to you. I can only tell you that all this is very much more serious than you think. The conspiracy which is being woven is so well thought out that it will be, so to speak, impossible for the monarchy and the church to escape from it. So, what happened at this 1782 meeting was actually genius on the part of the Illuminati provocateurs, and the reason they still get so much of the street cred still today. At first, it seemed like an extraneous detail in the story. The strict observance lodge system fell apart and lost its power in a vacuum that Weishaupt's network filled. But the Illuminati liked many aspects of the strict observance, especially the idea of a panopticon within the order's structure. There was always someone watching, observing, and supervising from the shadows, but those carrying out the orders never knew from whence the authority came. Likewise, Weishaupt drew many of his tactics from the Jesuits, who were his ideological enemies and whom he and his peers had seized power from in a coup. The Illuminati stole and borrowed from the Jesuits' playbook for covert action and put the subtle art into practice. Strict observance fell out of favor because the adepts of other diverse lodges weren't comfortable with the hardcore tenets that Weishaupt had already personally internalized and sworn to. This allowed Weishaupt's Illuminati to control the network of differing lodge traditions through eclecticism and cosmopolitanism.
I'm standing in the old city of Munich, not far from where Adam Weishaupt's headquarters for the Illuminati was found. It was the Lodge Theodore, also known as the Lodge St. Theodore, Albon Council. Now that lodge is nowhere to be found on the internet, although we know it's here somewhere in the old city. A lot of that old city was destroyed in World War II.
The Lodge Theodore was the place where the above-mentioned doctrines were most zealously propagated, but Weishaupt's emissaries had already procured the adherence of many other lodges. The eclectic masonry had been brought into vogue chiefly by their exertions at the Wilhelmsbad Convention. The Lodge Theodore was perhaps less guarded in its proceedings, for it became remarkable for the very bold sentiments in politics and religion, which were frequently uttered in their harangues, and its members were noted for their zeal in making proselytes. Many bitter pasquinades, satires, and other offensive pamphlets were in secret circulation, and even larger works of very dangerous tendency, and several of them were traced to that lodge.
So Adam Weishaupt used his Illuminati to come to power through the existing structures. The members of the Illuminati would infiltrate Freemasonry and join their ranks. Eventually, even the degrees of the Illuminati were adopted in many of the Freemason chapters throughout Europe.
More mystical lodges didn't want to perform rites for Knights Templar rituals, just for instance. But that was fine. Adopt the first three degrees of Masonry, which Weishaupt and Koenigi had reestablished, and each lodge could decide which, if any, of the higher degrees they would include. When this plays out, each node in the network gets to wear the colors that it likes and blend in with the locals the way it sees fit. Thus, the face of this secret order is that much harder to recognize. The order, then, can be attached to everything and nothing, a leviathan. It is no surprise that the traces of its existence have resurfaced under perhaps a couple hundred different groups, all pivotal in their time and place, perfectly positioned to affect key changes in the ongoing narrative of global social change and world revolution. Skull and Bones and America's Secret Society Fraternities, the Cecil Rhodes Roundtable and Secret Society, the Fabian Socialist, the Cambridge Apostles, the Bolsheviks in Soviet Russia in particular, and Marxist Communism and various forms of socialism in general, the Theosophist and Gandhi in India, Lawrence of Arabia and Milner's Kindergarten, Les Amis Reunis in the French Revolution, both Democrats and Republicans, and all manner of ancient orders revived as mascots in this multi-generational struggle. These groups feed off of conflict and division. They can operate within the range of ideas that the locals in each theater and venue will respond to and accept through capitalism and communism, through atheism and through religion. Can you appreciate the complexity, the totality, the subtlety? It'll take us years to finish pointing fingers and unraveling what has been done. Meanwhile, a secret network goes on weaving a fabric quietly from the shadows. I mean, do you get it? Can you appreciate what is and has been going on here? Afterwards, the Secret Order's influence knew no bounds in the sphere of politics and social life, but it made plenty of enemies with rival groups along the way, as well as the existing infrastructure. Its promotion of revolution, freedom from the prevailing system, the justification of suicide and of poisoning rivals, of blackmail and infiltration, as well as its anti-religious, pro-reason stance, all served to make the Illuminati a notorious band of rogues to watch out for.
Adam Weishaupt's Bavarian Illuminati utilized secret code names to hide their identities and keep them from being discovered from the existing authorities as they tried to use deception and infiltration to change those structures from within. Weishaupt's code name was Spartacus, and similar code names from the ancient world were given to the other members, and also code names for the cities and locations where they operated throughout Europe and eventually throughout the Western world. When the messenger carrying the secret documents of the Illuminati was struck by lightning and its membership list and agenda was revealed to the monarchies of the day, the group was outlawed. Its membership had to spread to the four winds and head to other countries where they thought they could be safe.
With the spreading paranoia among the nobility and upper classes taking hold across Europe, the Illuminati were banned officially by the Duke of Bavaria in the years 1784, 1785, 1787, and 1790. A number of police busts turned up evidence of the group's dealings, its members, and the reach of their plot, putting forward further pressure to outlaw the group. Second in command to the Illuminati, Adolf Freiherr von Karnegie ostensibly disbanded the group internally known as those who've been cursed by posterity. The Illuminati was officially over in 1785, and Karnegie stepped down from his position. However, historians have conclusively found that von Karnegie simply revived the Illuminati under the guise of numerous reading societies, as Weishaupt had originally instructed. Weishaupt told his initiates, quote, "Conceal the very fact of our existence from the profane. If they discover us, conceal our real objective by profession of benevolence. If our real objective is perceived, pretend to disband and relinquish the whole thing, but assume another name and put forward new agents." This plan was carried out with precision. Top brass of the Illuminati, von Karnegie and Johann Joachim Christoph Bode, re-established the organization under the guise of publishing houses that pushed for the printing of controversial Enlightenment literature while operating behind the scenes via a clandestine inner circle that directed the agenda. Adam Weishaupt was exiled and took asylum with Duke Ernst II of Saxe-Gotha until his death in 1830.
Look, Ernst, Toten Maske von Johann Adam Weishaupt. It's the death mask.
Operations were rumored to continue under J.J.C. Bode through reading societies and publishing houses, pushing controversial literature, and through an invisible network of operatives scattered around the world. The short-lived official existence of the Order of the Illuminati overlapped significantly with the American Revolution, which spanned 1775 to 1783, as well as the French Revolution, which peaked between 1789 and 1795. For better or for ill, the first shots of a worldwide revolution had been fired, and the brush fires set in the minds of men had begun to spread.
Now, America's founding fathers were mostly Masons. Almost all of them were within the Masonic power structure. They met at lodges and discussed many of their secret plans in those lodges. Likewise, the English they were fighting against were also mostly Masons, but they kept to separate lodges, and they planned much of their agenda inside those lodges where the members were required to keep secret.
Of course, the Illuminati also came to America after its founding in 1776, and through the lodge system of the Masons and other secret societies, began to infiltrate the society. They found many friends in America, particularly through the promotion of their doctrine for a new world order and the enshrinement of the rights of man under the understanding of the Age of Enlightenment.
By 1796, things had taken root. In his farewell address, published in papers in the fall of 1796, a retiring George Washington warned the young American nation that he was concerned with the rising dangers of factions operating under manipulative and opportunistic combines and associations, as he termed them, which could serve as powerful engines for taking over the reins of government. All obstructions to the execution of the laws, all combinations and associations under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or all the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive of this fundamental principle and a fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation, the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to snake the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and the incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans, digested by common councils and modified by mutual interest. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government.
There were different factions inside America, the Federalist primarily in the North and the Democrat Republicans primarily in the South. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were the leading figures of those factions. Jefferson, part of the Democratic Republicans, based in Virginia and the southern states, and John Adams, based in Massachusetts.
The 1797 publishing of John Robison's Proofs of a Conspiracy, which became popular and widely read in America, formalized the growing concerns in the English-speaking world about a network of influence out of control. The Illuminati had become a big talking point in the day. Privately, Washington acknowledged that the influence of the Illuminati and Jacobins' clubs had spread to America, though Washington denied that it had taken root inside the Freemasonic lodges inside the United States, despite the complete integration of Masonry and Illuminati across Europe. Washington instead shifted blame to the Democratic Republican clubs that had popped up supporting Jefferson and Madison's party. In a letter dated September 25, 1798, George Washington responded to one G.W. Snyder, "I've heard so much of the nefarious and dangerous plan and doctrines of the Illuminati, but never saw the book until you were pleased to send it to me. I wish to correct an error you have run into of my presiding over the English lodges in this country. The fact is, I preside over none, nor have I been in one more than once or twice within the last 30 years. I believe, notwithstanding, that none of the lodges in this country are contaminated with the principles ascribed to the Society of the Illuminati." In another letter dated October 10, 1798, Washington acknowledged receipt of G.W. Snyder's letter and of Robeson's book about the Illuminati. In a third letter from October 24, 1798, former President George Washington wrote, "It was not my intention to doubt that the doctrines of the Illuminati and the principles of Jacobinism had not spread in the United States. On the contrary, no one is more truly satisfied of this fact than I am. The idea that I meant to convey was that I did not believe that the lodges of Freemasons in this country had, as societies, endeavored to propagate the diabolical tenets of the first or the pernicious principles of the latter, if they are susceptible of separation. That individuals of them may have done it, or that the founder or instrument employed to found the democratic societies in the United States may have had these objects and actually had a separation of the people from their government in view, is too evident to be questioned."
These democratic clubs were secret societies where Illuminist members, Masonic members, and those promoting states' rights, mainly in the South, were able to meet in secret and agitate for their point of view. Because of this, they were seen as very threatening by the Federalist factions, mainly in the North, and attacked through the press of the day and through pamphleteering, and especially through the clergy, mainly based in Massachusetts.
It was no secret that Washington disagreed with the growing wave of dissent against the centralized policies spearheaded by Alexander Hamilton within his administration. Thomas Jefferson had left the administration to organize America's second political party, the Democrat-Republicans. Just as in France, which had turned revolutionary on the tail end of Jefferson's term as U.S. diplomat in Paris, this American party was to be a people's party, rousing the rabble and seeking to upset the balance of power so carefully arranged by the prevailing founders of the day. Jefferson's support for the French Revolution had fostered support for the growth of Democratic-Republican societies, which operated in a manner consistent with other independent Masonic lodges, and which continued to grow in strength even after France's reign of terror turned the Revolution to a bloody dark red color. In 1800, Jefferson wrote to the Bishop James Madison, cousin of the later president, acknowledging Robeson's book casting the Illuminati in a dark light, and instead defended Adam Weishaupt as a, quote, enthusiastic philanthropist who embraced the ideals of science, reason, virtue, and the, quote, perfectibility of man, though Jefferson claimed to have no previous knowledge of his work. I have lately, by accident, got a sight of a single volume, the third, of Abbé Birrell's Anti-Social Conspiracy, which gives me the first idea I have ever had of what is meant by the Illuminatism against which Illuminate Morse, as he is now called, and his ecclesiastical and monarchical associates have been making such a hue and a cry. Birrell's own parts of the book are perfectly the ravings of a bedlamite, but he quotes largely from Weishaupt, whom he considers as the founder of what he calls the order. I will give you the idea I have formed from only an hour's reading of Birrell's quotations from him, which you may be sure are not the most favorable. Weishaupt seems to be an enthusiastic philanthropist. He is among those who believe in the indefinite perfectibility of man. He thinks he may in time be rendered so perfect that he will be able to govern himself in every circumstance so as to injure none, to do all the good he can, to leave government no occasion to exercise their powers over him, and of course to render political government useless. This, you know, is Godwin's doctrine, and this is what Robeson, Birrell, and Morse had called a conspiracy against all government. Weishaupt believes that to promote this perfection of the human character was the object of Jesus Christ, that his intention was simply to reinstate natural religion, and by diffusing the light of his morality, to teach us to govern ourselves. As Weishaupt lived under the tyranny of a despot and priests, he knew that caution was necessary even in spreading information. He proposed, therefore, to lead Freemasons to adopt this object and to make the objects of their institution the diffusion of science and virtue. He proposed to initiate new members into his body by gradations proportioned to his fears of the thunderbolts of tyranny. This has given an air of mystery to his views, was the foundation of his banishment, the subversion of the Masonic order, and is the color for the ravings against him by Robeson, Birrell, and Morse, whose real fears are that the craft would be endangered by the spreading of information, reason, and natural morality among men.
John Randolph, Bishop James Madison. Here George Washington, subsequently Chancellor of the College, received his Surveyor's Commission in 1749, and John Franklin the honorary degree of Master of Arts in 1756, Thomas Jefferson in 1782, the degree of Doctor of Civil Law.
Though Jefferson was a member of the Flat Hat Club secret society at the College of William and Mary as a young man, his connections to Masonry and the Illuminati have long been disputed, though he was often accused of being an Illuminatus. It is, however, a certainty that he interacted with numerous high-level figures in France believed to be connected with the Illuminati, and whom he encountered during his time as a U.S. diplomat in Paris, and as co-author of the draft of France's 1789 Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen. More than 20 years earlier, another suspected member of the Illuminati, arrived on the shores of America with the help of Benjamin Franklin and, quote, just in time to spark off revolutionary thoughts. It was Thomas Paine. He immigrated from Britain in fall of 1774, and by January of 1776 published Common Sense, the pamphlet that stirred the British colonists in America to think of themselves as independent, to shirk off the reign of a distant king, and to form a free system of government for themselves. In other words, Thomas Paine, a professional propagandist, penned the narrative of the entire struggle of the American Revolution. Common Sense was an instant bestseller and long considered the most incendiary and popular pamphlet of the entire Revolutionary era. Paine held many posts during the war, but was fired from his post as Secretary of the Congressional Committee on Foreign Affairs in 1779 after he apparently alluded to secret negotiations with France in his writings. 2 years later, in 1781, Paine traveled to France and helped secure a $10 million loan for the Americans. Thereafter, he negotiated with the Bank of North America to arrange for the feeding and clothing of the army. That was the kind of clout that Paine held. Then, a few years later, the same year that the U.S. Constitution was formed in 1787, Thomas Paine traveled to Paris just in time to become embroiled in the nexus of the brewing French Revolution.
Thomas Paine, one of the most important founding fathers both in the American Revolution and the French Revolution, was later revealed to be a member of the Illuminati. In America, his pamphlet Common Sense was widely distributed and credited as sparking the revolution through the pen, not through the sword. He inspired Thomas Jefferson and other Republicans to declare the rights of men and eventually fight for the Bill of Rights. Thomas Paine would also help the Cercle Social in the French Revolution to print their propaganda and their pamphlets to demand the overthrow of the monarchy and in particular Louis XIV and start a new form of government based on reason. His book, The Age of Reason, was written in France, and a document, The Rights of Man, would enshrine the attempt to rule in the Age of Enlightenment not by kings and not by churches, but by the wisdom of man. Much of it based on the old pagan systems, and all working towards what they considered to be a new world order, or a novus seclorum of the ages.
Paine would go on to pen The Rights of Man, the radical treatise calling for republican government and the overthrow of monarchy in France, which was the equivalent of Common Sense in the American colonies, and which added significant fuel to the fire of the growing French Revolution. From his time in France from 1787 onward, Paine became best friends with and stayed in the home of Nicolas de Bonneville, the printer and publisher of Cercle Social, who was working to propagandize the masses and which doubled as an esoteric inner circle of French Illuminism and Masonry in combination with the Les Amis Reunis Lodge, run by Savayette de Long, which housed the powerful Philoletes order.
Now, Adam Weishaupt's Bavarian Illuminati had its biggest action in the French Revolution. They had a stronghold through a secret society known as the Cercle Social, which was also a printing press and a propaganda arm, and they took over the Jacobins and the other structures of existing French government.
Its members counted at least 2,000. The membership list that was exposed proves this, and there were very high-level members, including barons, dukes, and other financiers of the day in all countries of Europe. They later infiltrated America, but their greatest work was in the French Revolution. That was the one they actually carried out to full plan. Now, while the French Revolution promoted many good ideas, such as freedom of speech, freedom of religion, mirroring that of the American Revolution, it was at the same time an artificial revolution. It wasn't from the people. It didn't come from the ground up. The Illuminati helped put the plan into action using secret societies and covert secret action plan more than a decade.
In the summer of 1787, Johann Joachim Christoph Bode, the apparent head of the Illuminati order after Weishaupt's exile, traveled to Paris and convinced both Les Amis Reunis and the Cercle Social to accept Illuminati dictates under a newly formed secret lodge known as the Philadelphes, which was in essence the French Illuminati. Thus, a who's who of pivotal players in the French Revolution were steered and led by key figures connected to the Illuminati, reaching as high as the Duke d'Orléans, General Lafayette, Mirabeau, and other leading figures connected to the Jacobins and Illuminist circles within revolutionary France.
And it was only through deception, again, artificially driving the revolution through some incited, planned, and staged events. One of the most significant staged and artificial events of the French Revolution that really drove it into its pivotal point and made it irreversible was known as the Great Fear. It took place just before the big revolution of 1789. This was a classic deceptive and Machiavellian tactic carried out by at least five key Illuminati members. They included Lafayette, the Duke d'Orléans, Nicholas Bonneville, who led the Cercle Sociale, as well as the Tassin brothers, who were both Illuminatus as well as bankers, and the financier Savalette, who was later part of the National Assembly. Their plan included hoarding wheat. This was the big move by Duke d'Orléans. He bought up a significant portion of wheat to keep food from the population and initiate a great fear. He exported it to nearby islands and kept it from the people. Then they paid for 400 to 500 soldiers who rode on horseback and carried, once again, forged letters from the king saying to burn down the other chateaus and that the king only wanted to keep his own chateaus. In doing so, they killed members of the clergy and other aristocrats who were considered the enemies of this French Revolution. But that wasn't the end of it. They used this great fear to tell the villagers they were in danger and needed to arm themselves. This led to forming local militias in numerous towns throughout the countryside. Once a critical and pivotal number of these local militias were formed, Nicholas Bonneville of the Cercle Sociale publicly called for the First National Guard, a national assembly of regular populace who were armed as a militia. This would allow them to effectively check the power of King Louis XVI and his armies and lead eventually to the Second Revolution, where the king was removed from power and later killed. Adam Weishaupt's Illuminati believed they were perfectibilis. They believed that man could perfect themselves, that in fact man was God. This was also written explicitly by Nicholas Bonneville in his seminal work, Les Esprits des Religions, where he said simply, man is God. What else can it be? Man is everything. They believed they could perfect themselves, and by withering away the state, empower the individual, and through morality, mankind would heighten himself, not through religion, not through monarchs, and not through the state. This utopian dream was, of course, never accomplished, for good or for ill, but many of their important aims were, and their influence continues to this day.
In this way, and through the reading societies of the Enlightenment period, the Illuminati continued its influence and did everything in its power to launch a worldwide revolution that would stop only when man was free enough to rule himself, at least that part of man who were considered truly enlightened. The rest, of course, would have to be looked after by an elite guardianship, an invisible set of rulers looking after the rest of humanity that was too ignorant and too slow to wake up from its slumber.
Now this statue right next to the old University of Ingolstadt where Weishaupt founded the Illuminati is the Merigus, the birds of wisdom, which very much reflects their idea of ruling the world through wise men, through learned men who had studied the old pagan systems, the ancient regimes, by the old systems of republicanism, such as seen in Rome.
But the true legacy of the Illuminati continues. It was the working model for a secret government, cleverly concealed within existing institutions and perpetuated by the lure of its secret mysteries and seemingly noble aims. But those occultic religious trappings only disguised its true work, infiltration and domination.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election.
In the beginning of 1783, four professors were summoned before the Court of Inquiry and questioned on their allegiance respecting the order of the Illuminati. They acknowledged that they belonged to it, and when more closely examined, they related several circumstances of its constitution and principles. The order was said to abjure Christianity
and to refuse admission into the higher degrees to all who adhere to any of the three confessions. Sensual pleasures were restored to the rank they held in the Epicurean philosophy. Self-murder was justified on stoical principles. In the lodges, death was declared an eternal sleep. Patriotism and loyalty were called narrow-minded prejudices and incompatible with universal benevolence. Continual declamations were made on liberty and equality as the unalienable rights of man. The baneful influence of accumulated property was declared an insurmountable obstacle to the happiness of any nation whose chief laws were framed for its protection and increase. Nothing was so frequently discoursed as the propriety of employing for a good purpose the means which the wicked employed for evil purposes. It was taught that the preponderancy of good and the ultimate result consecrated every mean employed, and that wisdom and virtue consisted in properly determining this balance. This appeared big with danger, because it appeared that nothing would be scrupled at if we could make it appear that the order could derive advantage from it, because the great object of the order was held as superior to every consideration. They concluded by saying that the method of education made them all spies on each other and on all around them. But all this was denied by the Illuminati.